Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 20, Conversation Between Maitreya and Vidura, Text 3. Dvaipayanar anavaro Mahitvaitasya dehaja Savatmanasvitakrishnam Tat param chapyanuvrata Dvaipayanar anavaro Mahitvaitasya dehaja Savatmana Shita Krishna Tat Param Chapyanuvata Dvaipayanat Anavaro Mahitvaitasya Dehaja Savatmana Shita Krishna Tat Param Chapyanuvata Dvaipayanat, from Vyasadeva. Anavara, in no way inferior. Mahitve, in greatness. Tasya, his Vyasas. Dehaja, born of his body. Sarva Atmana, with all his heart. Shrita, took shelter. Krishnam, Lord Krishna. Tat Paran, those devoted to him. Cha, and. Api, also. Anuvrata, followed. Translation. Vidura was born from the body of Vedavyas, and was not less than he. Thus he accepted the lotus feet of Krishna wholeheartedly, and was attached to his devotees. Purport. The history of Vidura is that he was born of a Shudra mother, but his seminal father was Vyasadeva. Thus he was not less than Vyasadeva in any respect. Since he was born of a great father, who was supposed to be an incarnation of Narayan and who composed all the Vedic literatures, Vidura was also a great personality. He accepted Krishna as his worshipable Lord and followed his instructions wholeheartedly. Om Yena Timidandasya Ganjana Shakya Chakshumalitamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Purvunidhananda Shri Advaita Gadadara Shivasati Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare We'll speak a little on this verse, and then we'll go to the next verse, which is what I thought you were doing today. Vidura accepted Krishna as his worshipful Lord and followed his instructions wholeheartedly. He was attached to the devotees of the Lord. These two things are certainly required for making spiritual advancement in this crazy, dark age. To wholeheartedly accept the instructions of Lord Krishna and to be attached to Krishna's devotees. Our shelter is Krishna's instruction. A devotee is always keen to understand what Krishna is saying and apply it in life. That shows sensitivity and personalism. Also, a devotee is attached to the association of devotees. But that requires humility, in case you haven't noticed. You read in the Shastra all the time, one should be attached to the association of devotees. Association of Devotees is very much required for advancing in spiritual life. But then you also notice that it's not easy every minute of the day to associate with devotees, because humility is required. Life in material existence seems to work because of money. For money, anyone will tolerate anything. You take the money away, and how do you think people will get along in material existence? For money, they'll tolerate people they can't stand at work, bosses they can't stand. But in the Krishna conscious society, there's not much financial remuneration. So therefore, you're left to deal with each other based on the realities. There's no financial incentive to put up with someone. There's just your desire for coming to the spiritual platform and learning how to deal with others on the spiritual platform. That's the only thing that keeps things together, that kind of glue. This is a volunteer movement, a volunteer effort. So therefore, everyone's efforts are voluntary. We swim in the ocean of devotee association based on our humility. Humility means you'll tolerate even when you become minimized. Humility means you're not looking for respect, but you're ready to respect others. Lord Chaitanya describes this in the Anchalila of Chaitanya Charitamrita, where he speaks the Shikshastika verses. Someone who's humble can chant Hare Krishna all the time. Do you notice that when you get angry and prideful, then you don't chant Hare Krishna? It's not possible to chant Hare Krishna all the time when you're angry and prideful. But as soon as you take the humble position, then it's easy to chant all the time. We take the humble position. Why? Because we know that foremost is Krishna's pleasure. We're sacrificing for Krishna's pleasure. Just like a mother sacrifices for the child. Similarly, all our activities are motivated by what's best for Krishna. Thinking like that, we tolerate. Thinking like that, we accept inconveniences. So that is how devotees remain attached to the association of devotees. Even though sometimes there's a little rumbling, a little rustling. As Srila Prabhupada said, an old Bengali proverb, when there's many kitchen utensils together, there's going to be some rattling, some noise. Also, when there are clay water pots on a wagon pulled by a horse, there'll be some noise when the cart moves, when the wagon moves, as the clay water pots kind of bump together a bit. But that's all part of progress. So we're not utopians. We do expect that there'll be little rustling and rumbling and through different types of personalities, different levels of spiritual advancement all cast together. But those devotees who are determined to be attached to the association of devotees, they tolerate. More than tolerate, they welcome the chance for humility. Humility means you have to deal with persons who don't see things your way. That's something you realize when you come to the association of devotees, that you're the only person who really does things your way. Because there's no financial principle to hide that reality. Material life means economic development. And economic development means money. And for money, people will hide their real motives. But there's none of that here. So therefore, you see everyone's real motives out in the open. Which is good. And then you see that everyone's got their own style. Hare Krishnas are well known for having well-developed individualities. There's nothing to suppress it, that's why. There's no financial, you know, pressure that's putting everyone into the same mold. It's funny how materialists who are critical and don't understand, they accuse devotees of being all clone-like. If they only knew. Every devotee is just a full-blown individual. In a way that you can't find in material existence, where everyone is so much pressured to act a certain way. We don't have any financial incentives here for everyone to act the same way. Your spiritual master is not asking that everyone acts in the same way. I mean, I've never said that. You've got to all act the same way. Now, we welcome the richness of personal diversity. And we simply try to connect it to Krishna in a favorable way. Krishna's pleasure is the center. That is the peace formula. Not stamping out all different types of personal expression. No, that's impersonalism. We accept all the personal varieties, but we always make sure that Krishna is in the center. Krishna's pleasure is in the center. It's like here we have artistic type personalities. We have managemental, practical type personalities. We have Brahmana type personalities. All different types. But everyone can function together if they're thinking what is best for Krishna's pleasure. Once again, in order to be attached to the association of devotees, humility is required. Things are not always going to go your way. There will be misunderstandings. You're dealing with limited entities. You're not dealing with unlimited living entities. Only Krishna is unlimited. Devotees are limited. So, there'll be misunderstandings, misperceptions, but out of attachment for Krishna and a desire to please Krishna, you don't become devastated by all this. In fact, the devotee sees such things as opportunities to become more fixed in Krishna's service. That's how Vidura saw his being ridiculed by Duryodhan. Duryodhan said, well, we need to listen to this guy, Vidura. We know what his parentage is. He's born from a Dasiputra, maid servant. Okay, his father was Vyasadeva, all glories to that. But what about his mother? This is an ordinary palace girl. Why do you have to listen to him for? He should be thrown out, left with nothing but his breath. So, such a great devotee as Vidura. He's Yamaraj coming to take part in Krishna's pastimes. Yamaraj has a very tough service. Judging, awarding punishment to sinful people. So every once in a while he can take a break and join Krishna Leela. It's like our managers, they take a break. Like we have Guru Vani here. She's supposed to be taking a break. I hope she is. Is she? Okay. So. When devotees take breaks, it's not that they, you know, plunge into sense gratification. That's what materialists consider a break is. You know, in top, my father had a friend. I remember as a little boy, and he's a big fat man. And whenever it was time for holiday season, it's like you have your Anzac Day or whatever your holidays are. So. On his holiday and there's no work, he would come by and visit my father and say, yeah, holiday time, great, I got my old program worked out as usual. going to the beach for a few days, this, that, and simply R.I.I. So I was just a little boy. I said, R.I.I.? What's that? He was looking at my father and laughed. You don't know yet. You'll find out. R.I.I. is the essence of life. Rest, intoxication, and intercourse. The holiday. So, he was a big fat man. He had a big fat wife, and so, yeah, every holiday you know, just go to the beach and R.I.I. We devotees don't take those kind of things. We do rest, yes, but our intoxication is hearing about Krishna taking prasad. And our interactions are not of the physical lusty nature. Our interactions are of the Vaishnav Sangha, association with devotees. So, Vidura was insulted in such a way by Duryodhan. The insulting words of Duryodhan, as we discussed 2 days ago, were like arrows entering the ears of Vidura. And certainly his heart was aggrieved. But he was operating on another level, not simply the emotional level. He's operating on the level of what is Krishna trying to show here and what is best to do for Krishna right now. He could see this is Yoga Maya and Mahamaya operating simultaneously. Mahamaya, the illusory energy of the Lord, is causing Duryodhana, who's taken shelter of Maya, to act in this way. And Yoga Maya, the spiritual energy of the Lord, is providing me an opportunity to quit this palace, quit this place of intrigue, and go on pilgrimage. So he took advantage of the material situation for spiritual progress. That is skillful management. And during that tour of holy places, he came upon Uddhava, he came upon Maitreya, in this way showing that the real purpose in going to holy places is to take shelter of the saintly persons who reside there. Let us think how we can remain attached, or how we can increase our attachment for the association of devotees. It's easy to do if you're committed to being humble, realizing that everything's going to go your way. There will be tests. There will be hurdles. But a humble person can pass under everything. You know the limbo stick? So if you can go very low, you always get under the limbo stick. But someone who can't bend down low, they can't get under the limbo stick. If you appreciate the principle of association with devotees and become attached to that and just be humble, you can pass through all difficulties. Association with devotees is a spiritual skill. You request Krishna for that skill, and he'll give it to you, but you have to ask for it. All right, we'll go to the next text. Kim anvapichchan maitreyam virajas tirtha sevaya upagamya kushavata Asinam tattva-vittamam. Vidura was purified of all passion by wandering in sacred places. And at last he reached Hardwar, where he met the great sage who knew the science of spiritual life. And he inquired from him. Shonaka Rishi therefore asked, What more did Vidura inquire from Maitreya? Purport. Here the words Vidajastirtasevaya refer to Vidura, who was completely cleansed of all contamination by traveling to places of pilgrimage. In India, there are hundreds of sacred places of pilgrimage, of which Prayag, Hardwar, Vrindavan, and Rameshram are considered principal. After leaving his home, which was full of politics and diplomacy, Vidura wanted to purify himself by traveling to all the sacred places, which are so situated that anyone who goes there automatically becomes purified. This is especially true in Vrindavan. Any person may go there, and even if he is sinful, he will at once contact an atmosphere of spiritual life and will automatically chant the names of Krishna and Radha. That we have actually seen and experienced. It is recommended in the Shastras that after retiring from active life and accepting the Vanaprastha, retired order, one should travel everywhere to places of pilgrimage in order to purify himself. Vidura completely discharged his duty, and at last he reached Kushavarta, or Hardwar, where the sage Maitreya was sitting. Another significant point is that one must go to sacred places, not only to take bath there, but to search out great sages like Maitreya and take instructions from them. If one does not do so, his traveling to places of pilgrimage is simply a waste of time. Narottam Das Thakur, a great acharya of the Vaishnava sect, has, for the present, forbidden us to go to such places of pilgrimage because in this age, the times having so changed, a sincere person may have a different impression on seeing the behavior of the present residents of the pilgrimage sites. He has recommended that instead of taking the trouble to travel to such places, one should concentrate his mind on Govinda, and that will help him. Of course, to concentrate one's mind on Govinda in any place is a path meant for those who are most spiritually advanced. It is not for ordinary persons. Ordinary persons may still derive benefit from traveling to holy places like Prayag, Mathura, Vrindavan, and Hardwar. It is recommended in this verse that one finds a person who knows the science of God, or a tattvavit. Tattvavit means one who knows the absolute truth. There are many pseudo-transcendentalists, even at places of pilgrimage. Such men are always present, and one has to be intelligent enough to find the actual person to be consulted. Then one's attempt to progress by traveling to different holy places will be successful. One has to be freed of all contamination, and at the same time, he has to find a person who knows the science of Krishna. Krishna helps the sincere person. As stated in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Krishna Prasad, by the mercy of the spiritual master and Krishna, one attains the path to salvation, devotional service. If one sincerely searches for spiritual salvation, then Krishna, being situated in everyone's heart, gives him the intelligence to find a suitable spiritual master. By the grace of a spiritual master like Maitreya, one gets the proper instruction and advances in his spiritual life. Yes, that is the nature of holy places today, that there are pseudo-transcendentalists, pseudo-devotees present. If you don't know what you're doing, you'll get into big trouble, big confusion. That's why Srila Prabhupada didn't like devotees wandering around the holy dhams alone. Because, as you'll soon find out about India, in any field, material or spiritual, there's always a charlatan. Whether it's fixing tires, a doctor, guru, whatever. There's always a charlatan to take up every part, every role. So you have to know what you're doing. Therefore, Srila Prabhupada's general instruction was that devotees shouldn't wander around the holy dham. They should stay in the facilities that he provided for them. And that way not become bewildered by seeing so many concoctions and pseudo-devotees and pseudo-babajis and like that. It's become very bewildering in India. You don't know how to discriminate. It's like a babe wandering in the forest. Therefore, we follow the system of sending devotees to the Holy Dham in good association. It's like our Krishna Loka and Kadir Phan, they'll be going to Vrindavan, and I feel safe about it. I know they'll have the association and guidance of my god sister, Daivishvati Mataji, and so that's the system. Not that you just go to Vrindavan and just freelance, wander all around and speculate, get contaminated in so many ways. It has happened. It still happens. And it will happen in the future. So many devotees go to Vrindavan and they just don't know how to discriminate, and they become contaminated with many strange ideas. And so therefore, as this purport points out, you just don't go to the holy place to take bath. You go there to contact the saintly persons. And two things are required. Not simply the contact with a saintly person, but also freedom from contamination. The devotee has to do his or her part to become free of contamination so you can see clearly. And then there has to be guidance. That's why I'm not very keen on, like, just persons who know very little about Krishna consciousness or new devotees just going to India on their own. They just get bewildered. They're not free from contamination, so they don't know how to really profit from the situation. They don't know how to profit from any of the holy places. They go in a sightseeing mode, and they don't have the knowledge in order to see properly. Without knowledge, without purification, Vrindavan just looks like some noisy town right now. But when your eyes are devotionally tinged, then beside the material reality, you can sense the spiritual reality. But that sensing of the spiritual reality comes from devotional service. Now we're hearing that Vidura was purified of all passion by wandering in sacred places. This purification from passion is essential if you're going to be peaceful and secure in your life. We need to understand that all instability and all aggravations in life come from passion. The very thing that today's society embraces as the nectar is what causes all the problems, causes all the disturbances in life. People revel in passion. They drown in passion. And then they want world peace, inner peace, stress-free life. Impossible. The more passion there is, the more anger there will be. Why is that? Because passion cannot be fulfilled. Therefore, there must be anger, there must be wrath. Think about that. As soon as you take shelter of passion, there's going to be anger. Because passion can never be fulfilled. That's why Krishna explains it in Bhagavad Gita as Dusparinanalenacha, burns like fire and is never satisfied. A devotee has taken up the career to eradicate passion. Passion is a contamination. It's like having a fever or a bad cold. You know, when you have a bad cold, your sinuses are blocked, your ears are blocked. You can't taste, smell, hear properly. Sometimes you can't even see properly. So passion is like that. It's a virus, a fever, a flu that just takes over you. And until the flu passes, you can't really function properly. Your senses don't work properly. Just like, you know, the mucus gets packed into your sinuses and clogs up your nose. Similarly, the passion sits on top of your senses, your mind, and your intelligence. Krishna describes that in Bhagavad Gita. He's giving the direct clues. Here's where the passion is. Here's where the enemy is residing. Those reconnaissance tips will help you to spot the enemy and root him out. Look at your senses, look at your mind, look at your intelligence. That's where the lust is lurking. That's where the monster is prowling. So knowing where the monster is helps you to do something about it. What else does Krishna explain in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita? That every living entity is covered by different degrees of this lust. It's just a question of degree for conditioned souls. How much lust are you covered by? The trees, the vegetation, they're like an embryo in the womb, completely helpless, completely trapped. And then animals are compared to dust on a mirror. When dust covers a mirror, you can't see anything in it. And human beings are compared to being covered by lust to the extent of smoke covering fire. But if the sparks of the fire can be fanned, then gradually the smoke goes away and full-fledged, full-blown fire is there. So therefore, this smoke and fire can be compared to the beginning of Krishna consciousness. How to get those flames to become strong so that the smoke is driven away and you just have fire. You know, when you're trying to start a fire, at first it can be a lot of smoke, just a few sparks, and the room fills with smoke. But the goal is to get a good flame. So that is how we should manage our bhakti, how to get a good flame so that the smoke of lust goes away. When you think of lust as a disease, then it's easier to deal with. But that takes some knowledge and purification, because the training from society today is that lust is like a benediction. It's mercy of the Lord. If there is a God, thank him because he gave us lust. That's what people think today. When actually the reality is that lust is a scourge, it's a contamination, it's a disease. And it can distort your whole life. You've seen persons do things, crazy things, just because of lust. Put themselves in crazy situations just to satisfy the lust. This lust, it doesn't simply come as the itch of the body. It also comes as an itch of the subtle body. Just like, I think it was yesterday, Guru Vani and Vishnu Maya were explaining to me how ladies, you know, they can be like emotional junkies. We were discussing Bhakta Duncan and Guru Vani and Vishnu Maya, how a man, he can be victimized by his gross lust urges. And we were discussing the case of that I told you in class 2 days ago about these successful teenagers. And the guy, you know, he was unfaithful to his girlfriend, and he told her. And so I asked Guru Vani and Vishnu Maya, would you, if that happened to you, would you give the guy any credit for having told you? He said, no. So, you know, I said to Bhakta Duncan, so just see, that's why the men never tell, because, you know, if they said anything, they wouldn't get any mercy. Well, at least you were honest. Guru Vani and Vishnu Maya said, that's what Guru Vani said. I think Vishnu Maya was more merciful. She said, I would ask a lot of heavy, intense questions. Why did you do this? What were your reasons? You don't want to be with me anymore. They would be very heavy questions. So, and then after all that, I would probably just accept the guy, you know. The Guru Bani was just, that's it. Hit the road, Jack. I mean, he was honest. He didn't have to tell you, but just for the, you know, the sanctity of the relationship, he told you, that doesn't make a difference. How many of you feel like that? It wouldn't make a difference if he was honest. Raise your hands. How many feel it would make a difference? So most of them say, it wouldn't make a difference. That's why men don't tell. And then what's the use? You're damned if you do, damned if you don't, so better have a peaceful life and don't. It's all irrational, isn't it? And so, anyway. So the ladies were explaining that. I asked, well, what would cause a woman to be unfaithful to a relationship? The men, they have their gross itches. They don't care about the emotions so much. It's just the gross itches dealing with that. And they expect the lady to understand, look, you know, you're the real one. This little thing I had on the side was just a diversion, a bit of recreation, you know. My heart wasn't in it. You know, it's just something that happened, you know. They expect the lady to understand that. In fact, men can be so stupid. Sometimes they even say this thing, which is obviously the dumbest thing you could say. Actually, all the time I was with her, I was just thinking of you. They really mean that. They think that's going to really score points, you know. They don't understand. It's like the ultimate insult. So, but Guru Bani and Mr. Meyer explaining the ladies, if the ladies would, you know, be unfaithful to their relationships because they think they see a better emotional deal somewhere else. Yes, is that so? Maybe this guy, he's going to be better for my emotions. So maybe if I let him indulge, then there'll be an emotional future. Most ladies can't understand that men couldn't care less about an emotional future. So they were telling me this. I'm always doing research, you know, so getting all this research information. The lady, you know, if she deviates from her relationship, it's because she thinks maybe there's a chance for more emotional fulfillment with this one. But that's also an itch. It's all the same thing. Lust. There's the gross itches, the subtle itches. To be an emotional junkie, you know, to have this itching emotional body, you know, dripping with emotions. It's also lust. Satisfy the body, satisfy the emotions. It's all the same thing. You should be able to see lust is manifesting when people are struggling in their economic life. Mental speculation is also lust. It's all about lording it over to get what you want. You can do that even through speculation. Lust sits on the intelligence and causes you to speculate. Try to figure everything out yourself with your tiny brain. So please remember Krishna's words in Bhagavad Gita. Every living entity is covered by different degrees of lust. That's the way conditioned life is. Krishna consciousness means to cleanse. Cheto dharpana marjanam. Cleanse the dust from the mirror. Bhava mahatha bhagi nirvapanam. Extinguish the fire of conditional life. Where's the fire department for doing that? That fire department is the holy name of Krishna. The holy name of Krishna eradicates sinful material existence. It purifies you and then awakens varieties of devotional service. That is explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Congregational chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is the only thing that causes progress, true progress in Kali Yuga. Yajnaya Sankirtana Prayaya Yajanti Sumedasa Karabhajana Muni speaks that in the 11th canto. Those who are intelligent, who have actual brain substance in the age of Kali, they practice the congregational chanting of Hare Krishna, which will eradicate the sinful condition of material existence. That is why kirtan is so important. The individual chanting, japa, is important. The congregational chanting together is important. This is Lord Chaitanya's instruction, how to deal with the lust. Purify it through kirtan, and then you see that my real desire is to use things for Krishna's pleasure. The principle of pleasing senses is there in any status of life, whether material or spiritual. Material life means pleasing your senses, someone else's senses, all for ultimately getting benefit for your senses. Spiritual life means pleasing Krishna's senses. So who here can say they don't know how to please senses? Everyone here has experience in pleasing senses. Now transfer that expertise to Krishna's senses and your life will become perfect. It's very practical, bhakti yoga. Everyone is always expert at pleasing the senses of someone. Now just apply that expertise to Krishna's senses. And you become purified of all passion. Know what the enemy is. As Krishna says in the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you have to deal with this enemy. Stop this enemy that destroys spiritual progress. Everyone here knows, without passion desire, your Krishna consciousness would be so much easier, right? Everyone knows that. But you can get rid of that. If you apply yourself, you can become cured. And you always have to be watchful, knowing how Maya works. Protect your spiritual assets. Protect your spiritual wealth. This passion or lust is the result of trying to lord it over material nature. The more you engage in devotional service, the less you'll have opportunity to lord it over material nature, and therefore the less contamination will decrease. When there is passion, rajagun, you can't make a clear decision. Not possible. Clarity is there in sattvagun, mode of goodness. But when there's passion, your brains are contaminated. You can't see straight. I was explaining to someone yesterday how we have the regular principles to protect your intelligence. Someone's trying to decide, should I marry, should I not marry? If there's been illicit sex, it's hard to make that decision because there are hard knots in the heart that have formed based on that illicit connection. And those attachments embedded in your heart prevent you from making a clear decision because you're addicted to the sensuality and you can't see straight because of that addiction. Underneath all your decisions, especially for a man, is, well, what if I lose this sensuality? Ooh. There's nothing like having sensuality on tap. What if that goes? Ooh. So, if there has been illicit contact, then it's very hard to make a clear decision about the relationship. The whole decision-making process is contaminated. But if there has been a proper relationship, then you can see clearly, because the brains aren't boiling from lusty interactions. You can see clearly, yes, I add up all the points. This relationship looks like it would be good to invest in. No, it doesn't. Or maybe I just don't know right now. There's no harm in saying, I just don't know right now. It's like for men who don't know yet what they want their future to be, we have our contemporary Vedic ashram, where men can just chill out for a while, a couple of years, and just decide what they want to do with their life while making advancement in Krishna consciousness. So I was explaining how we have these regular principles to protect people. You can't make a proper decision when your brains are boiling. You have to step back. And of course, best is you never stepped into it, so you don't have to step back. Then you can look at the situation clearly. But when there's contamination, your intelligence is spoiled. As Lord Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, the lust sits on your intelligence, it sits on your mind, it sits on your senses. And then there's this tug of war going on. The men have the heavy physical itch. The ladies have the emotional homemaking itch. Homemaking meaning they want to establish a secure, stable fortress in the material world for themselves. Emotional fortress. Also a physical fortress. The house for a lady is like the place. The idea is this is going to be emotional security, physical security. It's all going to be there. It's my world. My nest. Then you have to capture a male bird to stay in the nest. And that's a problem. Because what is the nature of a male bird? They like to fly. Not simply in the air. They like to fly to other nests. So then you have the lady bird in her nest trying to make her nest the all-in-all and convince the male bird, this is it. This is the nest. You're not flying anymore. And then the male bird calculates, well, there's no way I'm going to accept this, but in order to keep the lady bird, I've got to pretend. Yeah, 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 this is it. This is the nest. I'm not going anywhere else. I'll never fly again. It's the nature. Male birds like to fly, and lady birds like the nest. And male birds like a nest for some time, but then there's the freedom of the air, and of course there's also other nests. So this is why this tension goes on. The ladybird is insisting, this is the nest. There are no other nests. Do you understand? You're going to stay in this nest, and there's going to be little baby birds. Do you understand? And the male bird, yeah, yeah, of course I understand. The male bird looks over his shoulder and sees the blue skies, the clouds. And he also knows there's other nests out there with many desperate, each one having a desperate lady bird. He starts calculating. Because men calculate. If I do this, I'll gain this, I'll lose that. Yes, sense gratification with her has been good, but she's not the only one. They never tell you that, though. Yes, when convenient. That's the whole point for a man. Convenient sense gratification. On tap, like in a pub, you know. But then, push comes to shove, men start thinking, nevertheless, it's available everywhere. So why should I sacrifice my freedom for something that's easily available everywhere? So this way there's this tension always going on. And it's all about lust. The lady bird's got her lust. Her lust comes out in terms of the nest. The little baby birds, they need worms in their mouth. And the male bird, that lust comes out just in terms of gross sense gratification and freedom. Men lust for freedom. Freedom to do what? Freedom to just do whatever their senses tell them to do. I want to fly, flap my wings. That's a lust. Yes. Be me. Find myself. That's a lust. Men don't understand that. They think it's part of their virile nature, you know, part of their potency. So you have this duality, because that's the way material existence is. Dvandva Mohena Bharata, as Krishna told Arjuna. Break free from this illusion of duality. There's always duality in material life. It's never the way you want. You have the lady who wants to nest, and then the man just doesn't cooperate. And you have the man who wants sense gratification, but he wants to be free also, and the lady just won't cooperate. So there's always like this. That's material life. But then you have these desires, which are never fulfilled. Therefore, there must be anger. And especially when there's been illicit connection between the man and woman, when they told their relationship, the lady gets very angry. I gave myself to you, and you are not doing things according to my plan. And they just get angry. Of course, the obvious intelligent thing to do is not give yourself, but that doesn't enter into the lady's heads. You put yourself into a vulnerable position, and then you wonder, what's happening? Things are not going according to plan. I gave myself, gave everything, but now he's not doing what I want. That's the way it is. And that's what the men say also. They say, that's the way it is. They like it that way. Free tickets to the amusement park and no responsibility. Yeah, in the future. You know, these are serious subject matters. We'll discuss this in the future. Right now, it's not ready. That's why in real human civilization you have these structured arrangements for relationships. Obligation, responsibility, commitment. And the real affection comes from commitment and duty, not the romance which fades 2 years at the most. Yes, our spiritual life would be so easy without Rajagun's harassment. But you can deal with that harassment by working hard in Krishna's service. Just like your tongue. If your tongue is tasting food offered to Krishna, it can't taste abominable foodstuffs. You become addicted to Krishna Prasad. You can't get Krishna Prasad walking down Cuba Mall. Unless you meet a devotee with one of those sweets. I saw Tara's pictures. I think Gokul Leela also took some pictures of people popping those sweets in their mouth. They won't get that tongue satisfaction in the most expensive restaurant. Simply by keeping your senses in Krishna's service, where's the opportunity for sense gratification? And that's how you conquer Maya. When you feel the pressures of Maya, then just put your senses immediately into Krishna's service. Think of Krishna. Chant Hare Krishna. Do something with your senses for Krishna's pleasure. Very practical. So what if it takes a while for you to conquer this enemy? It took you so many births in so many species on so many planets to ruin yourself by surrendering to lust. What's wrong with taking a few years only just to cleanse yourself? Then you'll have true peace. That's why we pay no attention to all these talks about world peace. We know, impossible without sense control. Yesterday, Steve was telling me about life in Whanganui. It was a city of 60,000. Used to have a harbor. The harbor closed and a lot of unemployment and nothing for the young people to do. So therefore, there's just drugs and illicit sex going on. What else are the girls supposed to do, you know? All they can do is do something with their bodies. And the men, what else can they do but engage in that way and get intoxicated also? We need Krishna conscious teachers to go to all these places and rescue persons who are just being destroyed in this way. To be able to help others, first you have to help yourself. You have to know how to cope with the enemy of lust, which can be neutralized through devotional service. First, you have to understand, no matter how loud the enemy calls, you will not be satisfied. Impossible. Some people take a long time to understand that. But if you keep yourself in the fire of devotional service and attentively chant the holy name, you can deal with this enemy. Purified of all passion, then it's very easy to understand the science of spiritual life. And then you can hear and chant about Krishna in peace. What you can do when you're attacked by the arrows of lust, just map out in your mind what happens. Okay, the arrow pierces you. Your brains are boiling. Your senses are inflamed. Okay, then you think, all right, suppose I go through with it, then what? You have to look at the end. I go through with it, and then what? What's the after effect? As I explained so many times, Maya tries to get you from looking at the result. Just look at the front end, not the back end. Like there's a car going by on the street. You just look at the front end. You don't look at the back of the car. So that's the way to lose your energy works. Just look at the front end. Look at how your senses are boiling now. Think how nice this is going to be to grab a hold of this or that. Does Maya ever tell you, look at the results? Have you ever had that inspiration from Maya? Look at the end result? Never. It is not going to happen. Just look at the front end. It'll be absorbing. It'll be, you'll feel wanted. You'll feel needed. You'll feel that you are the Lord. You'll feel like a natural man. You'll feel like a natural woman. Blah, 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 nah, nah, it goes. While I'm traveling, I look in the airlines magazines, and you know they always have all these perfume advertisements in, so I'm starting to cut out these perfume advertisements, and also the blurbs they attach for each type of perfume. You ever seen those? It's just, yeah. This fragrance is of eternal femininity. What in the world is that? But they just write, you know, it just sounds good, you know. This fragrance, Chanel number 5, is the fragrance of eternal femininity and unlimited desire. Once we get our projector screen and we get a projector system, we can see these on the screen and analyze them. And, you know, the pictures in perfume ads is always some lady, you know, and some man with his head on her, buried deep in her shoulder, and the lady's got this look of like, like all the emotions are just being completely satisfied. Yeah, I'm going to get these pictures that, you know, we could analyze it. And the words of the advert that they write are just so stupid. You know? But they know what they're doing. Why are those words there? Because people believe it. Another one says, for when you're in that seductive mood and you don't want to fail, use such and such perfume. In other words, it empowers you with infallibility. And now, of course, the way things work today, the men want to be women, the women want to be men, so they're marketing, you know, they don't call it perfume, they call it cologne or whatever for men. They're trying to get the men into it all, that, you know, you need fragrance. It'll really help your life. Yes, that's what's going on. It's just capitalism, you know. You got to have an expanding market. So they're making the men feel insecure, that unless the men wear some kind of odor, they're not the real man. That way, the men will start buying, basically, perfume. This is going on. Once you interact with the mode of passion, you have to be involved with all these things. Your life becomes crazy. Better to learn how to use your senses for Krishna's pleasure and go back to Godhead. It takes some effort. There's no doubt it takes some effort. But that effort is so precious, it's so consequential for attaining Krishna's satisfaction. All right, any questions?
Sometimes we have devotees come to us and say, actually, the association of the devotees is very nice, but I think I can practice better outside.
Outside, what does that mean?
Outside the association of the devotees.
Not possible, because you have to associate with someone. Loneliness is very, very excruciating. Everyone wants someone. Everyone wants some kind of friend to talk to. So if you make your friends non-devotees, then you'll be contaminated. Why is it that when it comes to having non-devotee friends, we're tolerant, but when it comes to having devotee association, we can be intolerant? Haven't you all had non-devotee friends did they always do whatever you liked or do things the way you liked? How many of you have friends like that? But you overlook those things, right? Yeah, it's my friend, you know. So why can't we tolerate inconveniences from the association of devotees? One thing that does make association with devotees difficult is because you want to love devotees, you want to like devotees, and when they hurt you, it really is painful. One has to be tolerant. It's really painful to be hurt by devotees. And because we're trying to reach out to people and give them a chance for purification. Until they're fully purified, there's a chance that they're going to cause pain for another devotee. So basically, you have to be forgiving, just like you'd want someone to forgive you. It really takes a fine art and sensitivity for associating with devotees. So I wish that all of you would become blessed by that. Anything else? Yeah.
There's one way to serve Guru, to follow the instruction. There's one way to follow. There's one way to serve Guru, to follow instruction.
If you go to a doctor, shouldn't you take the doctor's prescription? Otherwise, why go to a doctor? Right, Mahava? If you have an appointment with the doctor, you go. And you take the prescription. You're serious about getting well. Without that, where's the service? You can't approach Krishna directly. You have to go through Krishna's devotee. That's what the Shastra says. Yes?
You're talking about mindfulness and thing like this. And you're saying that mindfulness wanting to be thing.
That's the way it is these days. Let's chew the chew in a different way. Yep. You'll find the propaganda now is that men should be more emotional. They should get more into their emotions. And ladies should be more aggressive and assertive. Make their mark in the world. It's like, let's all switch how we chew the chewed. The men are tired of being men because, there's no taste to domination. The women are tired of being women because there's no taste to just being submissive. Without Krishna consciousness, nothing works. So the women think, why don't we be like the men? That's where it's at. And the men are thinking, why don't we be like the women? That's where it's at. Why can't we wear perfume? Why can't we be emotional and sensitive and all that kind of thing? Really, that's what's happening. Why can't we stay home and take care of the kids? Men are thinking of that. Maybe that's the new taste that we've missed. And the ladies are thinking, why can't we get out there and achieve and be career motivated and be brutal and hard and heavy on each other like men? It's like I was telling Guruvani, whenever I'm going through immigration in some airport, you have all the counters, passport control counters or in a row, I always look and see, where are the lady passport officers? Never go to them. Why? Why do you think? Yeah, they're out to show, we can do our job better than any man. So they just get real heavy on you. How long are you going to be here? What is your business? Where are you going to stay? Can you show me your ticket? How much funds do you have? Whereas the man will just, hey, mate, how you doing today? But the women have to show that they can do a man's job better. So they're just merciless. So I just always scan the whole row of counters and, just avoid the women. Because the women want to be more than the men. We can show you, we can be heavy. This is how Maya works. No one is satisfied with anything. Now it's becoming so confusing. The men want to be women, the women want to be men. And then it's also, you know, why don't we be both? Maybe that's how to enjoy. Be both. Really, this is what's going on. And, of course, Maya makes it so that society is very accepting. Oh, both. Yeah, that is really advantageous. You have it both ways. It's bad enough lusting after just the opposite sex. Can you imagine lusting after all the sexes? You just go, oh my God. No peace. But that's what's going on these days. And does it mean that everyone who's interacted in that way with the same sex is a homosexual? A huge percentage of students, university students in America, have admitted having same-sex interactions just to find out what it's like. Why not? You got this body. Why not just see what enjoyment with the same sex is like as compared with enjoyment with the opposite sex? It's just all part of life, you know? This is going on. Chew the chewed in all possible ways. So it doesn't mean automatically that they're homosexuals. It just means, hey, this is what's going on these days. You try to enjoy in all different kinds of ways and find what's really your pleasure, what really suits you. And this way, people are just drowning in more and more lust. And they'll become more and more angry, therefore no peace. Yes?
And can you explain how the Asanapanapis is the ashrams and the experience of frustration due to frustration, the anger due to frustration and to anxiety, and then they become right with such things that anger, frustration goes down somewhat.
What does rightly situated mean?
Like,
into the you'll only be satisfied with devotional service. Just having a man or a woman around is not going to satisfy you. It's like a pacifier. The baby's yelling too much, so the mother pops a, you call it a dummy here, right? It's like you pop a dummy in the mouth. It's a temporary solution, but it's authorized. It's an authorized solution. But without Krishna there, it's not going to work. It's a temporary solution for the body and mind. It's not the ultimate solution. Therefore, at the end of life, according to the Vedic life cycle, at the end of life, you retire to once again face the same problem. You have to live with yourself and learn how to deal with yourself. But for the middle part of your life, you can go through this attempt to stabilize yourself, stabilize the body and mind. But ultimately, the solution is spiritual. So the Grihastha Ashram is an authorized ashram for making spiritual progress. It gives you the authorized dummy to put in your mouth. It's authorized. You got this body, you got this mind, you're not ready to live purely on the spiritual platform. So, take the dummy in your mouth and go on chanting Hare Krishna. In fact, you can become such a successful grihastha that it is a fully spiritualized relationship. That is possible, that is desirable. It takes some effort though. That's the one thing sincere devotees find out when they marry. You still have to try. You still have to work on yourself. You still have to struggle. It's not like, oh, okay, we had the yajna, all problems are over. No. You still have to struggle. Because then you've got the Sunday feast right in front of you. What to do? If you want to make spiritual advancement, you control your senses. If you want to put your spiritual life on the shelf for a while, you indulge freely. That's why people, when people inquire, when devotees inquire, what about householders who don't follow regular principles? Yes, that does go on. It's just they shouldn't expect to make spiritual advancement, that's all. When they're ready to make spiritual advancement again, they'll stop. They'll stop their excessive behavior. That's all. Yeah, you get what you pay for. When there's Krishna in the center, then you can be satisfied because devotional service is there. Householders who follow the regular principles become very powerful, very powerful. I have seen. It's like you talk to Yashoda, Dulal, and Rimila in Christchurch. They'll just tell you point blank. You know, they've been married for so long. They said, you know, we just always follow the regular principles. I mean, you can feel the potency. And the realizations. So that's what Srila Prabhupada had in mind by urging that everyone learn how to control their senses, even householders. Sometimes Vaishnavas from other lines in India, they will say, what has your Prabhupada done? No Vaishnavacharya has ever before tried to regiment what goes on, you know, in married life. It's not true. If you read the Bhagavatam, you'll see it's not true. But anyway, that's folk conception. Srila Prabhupada knew that without sense control, even in household life, no one's spiritual life will go very far. They'll just be low-level devotees. And he wanted more than low-level devotees. Yes?
As time goes on, there's some desire to resist and try and renounce the desire becomes weaker. Well, it just kind of comes with determination.
Comes to what?
Determination becomes weaker. Of course, like you're saying, like households that don't follow the regular principles, on the shelf. So why would you come to a point where you feel like this is what I want to do?
Desire. Lack of attentive chanting. Laziness. Bad association with other householders. No one follows, you know. I mean, you know, what do they expect, you know? We're not brahmacharis. That gets into your ear and, you know. Yeah, right, yeah. I personally have, and many sannyasis have the policy, I don't personally deal with householders and they're following the principles. I put the information out and then it's a touchy thing, you know, especially amongst men. You know, they got the ego, you know.
It's my wife.
And they freak out if the wife tells the guru, you know. My husband is following. The men just, oh, they get enraged. Everyone knows, though. You know why everyone knows? Because the women talk to each other. I mean, amongst the householders, everyone knows, because the women always go, does your husband follow? Mine doesn't. Mine's too. That's what you have to surrender to when you're married. The female grapevine. No offense. All your business is all over the whole community. Some men, married men, get so disturbed by that, they just move to the middle of nowhere. I'm taking her away from everybody. We're going to live in, you know, Turangi or something. Is that Turangi? No, not Turanga. Turangi, you know. But they get so fried, you know, that their business is out all over the community. Because that's the female nature. They got to talk about things with another woman. Right? You agree, aren't you? Yeah, that's just the way it is. But the men aren't like that. They can't stand it. So I myself, you will not find me. Sometimes even couples come to me, what to do. Even they come together, I know. Sometimes the woman wants to ask advice. The man, I can see he's embarrassed. Like that. Because generally the ladies get tired of this stuff quicker than the men. Especially when they see there's no emotional fulfillment involved. Okay, we'll turn him in. We'll dominate. That's the way I'm faced. So I just play it like, sorry, it's not my department. You all read the books. You all have heard. I speak about these things in lectures. If you want to make spiritual advancement, you know what you have to do. Yes?
Switch roles between marital and society now, it's creating such confusion, even when the kind of Christian consciousness is still in that confused state of what our role is in our thing now. So is it false determination for a young woman to vote and to want to buy a house at the greenhouse or ashram? Is that still an influence of the switch roles?
No. Quite often it's unreasonable. It's just a matter of time for most. There are exceptions. The exceptions prove the rule. Ladies, for the most part, like relationships. They also like to produce. The nest with the baby birds. It's material nature, expanding the population by pushing on the ladies, produce, produce. You want fulfillment. You want your own creations. It's material nature. Every case is individual. Therefore, my policy, for the most part, is to wait until everybody makes up their own mind. Unless I see someone getting so out there that you just have to tell them, look, this is best for you. But for the most part, everyone should make their own decision. It's like the men, I always tell them, you've got to decide. I'm not going to live with her the rest of the life you are. I take rest by myself. You have to agree to be with this person all your life. I may make recommendations. Maybe this is a good one for you to check out since you're inclined in that way. That's it, though. But I just like on every product, there's a disclaimer. Manufacturer takes no responsibility. So I always give the disclaimer. You know, maybe this one's, you reach into the fish tank, pull this one out, it might be a good one, but no responsibility for the choice. It's all on your shoulders. As I've explained before, what's happened, particularly here in New Zealand, 15, 20 years ago, the average age of a woman having her first child was 26. Now it's 32. Because all the ladies are thinking, I've got to do something in the world first. I've got to make my mark. Almost all of them say, we will settle down. Yes, we want families, but not now. We've got to do our thing for a while. So, you know, we go with the flow, you know. Around the world, I've seen there are exceptional cases, ladies who are really absorbed in service and preaching. Yeah, a few of them are able to go the distance. By the time you hit the end of your 40s, it's easy. It's easy. Then you're coasting downhill. Then it's like storm has passed. But most persons can't wait out the storm. They've got to, you know, stick, you know, the dummy in the mouth, you know, otherwise, you know, you just go nuts. So it's a legitimate solution. It's not to be despised. It's a legitimate Vedic solution. Comes from Krishna. You can't be fully spiritual overnight, so do like this. But then, if in the household Krishna is there to such a strong degree, the household becomes fully spiritualized. That's possible. Yes?
Is it possible to make more advancement by living single life all the way through? Or does that depend on the individual as well?
Is it possible to?
Sorry, to advance more spiritually by living a completely single life all the way through your life?
I think so. But most disagree. So therefore there are four ashrams. All of them are bona fide. You asked me, so I told you, I think so.
It is up to the individual.
Of course. Who else could it be up to? You have to live your life. You have to walk in your shoes. It may be that, for example, if I see someone who is obviously disturbed, there are symptoms in a man when he needs to make an ashram change. There are symptoms in a lady. You know, when ladies go through their pre-nesting phase, you know, they just change. And men, you know, they go through a certain phase. They get spaced out. They get angry. You know, they need a fix. The ladies become completely disagreeable, you know. Can't take it anymore, the ashram. Tired of it. Sick of these women. Then they start dreaming. I'll have a palace. And there'll be a man to do whatever I want. He'll respond perfectly to all my emotions. That'll solve everything. And the man starts dreaming, you know, when you're going through that phase. She'll be a perfect Vedic queen, completely submissive. I snap my fingers and she'll come running. Yes, Prabhu? We have many householder couples who are dynamically preaching Krishna consciousness. We also have many who are drowning in their ashram. So it's up to the couples. And it's sometimes difficult because sometimes the lady wants to be more Krishna conscious, the man doesn't. Or the man wants to be more Krishna conscious, the lady doesn't. It's a whole thing. So you have to decide. You're not ready to make a decision now, though. You'll have to decide how you want the whole future of your life to be. It's like I was telling Guruvani a few days ago. The way her candidate is now, that is the way he's going to be. He is not going to change. And the way you are now, he should know that you will change. That's the way it is. Ladies think that the man, you know, he's got a few things wrong with him. I'll fix that. You know, gives me a good project, decoration job, you know. Just fix that. He'll be in perfect shape, you know, and then everything will be fine. And then they're totally disappointed to find out men don't change. And they even hate it when you imply that they should change. It's an insult. Don't you like me the way I am? So men don't change. Of course, they can always be more Krishna conscious. But generally speaking, their material characteristics don't change. They're always going to be inconsiderate. They're always going to be insensitive. That's just the way it is. But the ladies always hope. Yeah, I'll just adjust him this way and that way. He's a good project. You know, it gives me some busy work, like a hobby. And what do the men think? The way she is at the time of our marriage, Yagya, that's the way she's always going to be. Forget it. Every man will always tell you, she's changed so much. What grihasthas have told me is that the main thing that destroys marriages is false expectations. It's the main thing that destroys them. And a main part of those false expectations is the woman thinking the man's going to change and the man thinking the woman's never going to change. So those of you who are going that route, it's just best to be honest with each other. And just, okay, you can tell the man, I realize that this is the way you are. And the man can say to you, I realize that this is not the way you're going to be. Yes?
If you're saying that women change, is there like a way that they just... Is it like a
standard thing? Or is it just like a... Who is it? One disciple, Snan Yatra in Los Angeles. He told me, it's like trying to hit a moving target. Just recognize that's where it's going to be. The target's always moving. That's the male point of view. What do you do when you're trying to hit a moving target? Or trying to photograph a moving target? Huh? You've got to constantly refocus all the time. Because the target's moving. You always have to, you can't get a steady shot. You've got to, the target moves, you've got to refocus again. Target moves, refocus again in order to take your picture. finally you realize the only solution is to be, you autofocus. You're just, you know, these cameras that just focus automatically every time that the subject moves. You have to be like that. You're always on autofocus. Cameras that are on autofocus, you can always hear them making the sound. They're just changing the focus according to the moving subject. That's what you have to be. Always. It's work. Yes.
Pretty much, is it okay for women then, maybe the natural design to get married might arise, but is it okay for a woman with consciousness to kind of churn through that design to get to the other side? Or was that kind of like the determination to make spiritual advance of class, would that come naturally that we discover what is or without even having that design?
Most ladies, much more than men, will marry. Most men will marry, but most ladies will marry. It doesn't have to be right away. This is just the way it is. Yes?
Would it be
okay
for
it's like Guru Rani was in no rush. He's, how old are you now? 31. So now she's, you know. There's no rush. You didn't feel rushed, did you? You waited your time, you sized up the talent, right? And made your move, right? And then there's generally no hope for whoever the target is. He's totally stung. No rush, you know, you deliberate, you know, you wait your time. Of course, she always asks for permission before she fires her missiles. So, there's no rush. Okay? There's no pressure off here on anyone to do anything except be Krishna conscious. Most women, besides a loving father, also require a nice husband. That's just the way it is. But there's no rush. We go with the flow. I told you what the statistics are for New Zealand. Guru Vani hit the statistics right on the head. You know, it's really 32 before something serious may happen. That's the way society is now. Women like to achieve things. They want to make their mark in the world. Okay. You give them full facility. It's not artificial. I don't see any ladies here who are denying their nature. I don't see that. I don't see any artificial renunciation going on here. I see everyone's where they should be at the present moment in time. You understand, Anja? Right. How old are you? 25. You're in no rush, are you? No. You know where these guys are at. Been there, done that, right? You know where the, you know, you know what the man thing is all about, right? Yeah. Nothing new, right? Huh? Yeah. Yes. You're asking a lot of questions today. Gosh, I could have sworn you were a brahmachari.
Obviously, what you were saying is different from
what they recognized years ago, like in terms of how.
Oh, you mean women getting married at 12? Yeah, it is different. Any ladies here want to get married at 12? Yeah. Now, women don't marry at 12. They just become, you know, everyone's property at the age of 12. That's civilized. But women marrying at 12 and giving birth to children at 12, how abominable. That's the way people today think. When Prabhupada's sister was 12 and she wasn't married, her mother was just in total anxiety, criticizing the father. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? He said, I'm trying. My daughter's 12. She's not married. Because the society was structured in a proper way. Now that's considered barbaric, marrying women at 12. How horrible. But it's considered very enlightened that 12-year-olds are having all sorts of random affairs. That's okay. That's part of life. You know, girls will be girls, boys will be boys. And then, of course, there's the ultimate New Zealand benediction. Bring him home. Let him live with you. That requires some expert experience guidance. The main thing is engagement in Krishna's service. This is not the main thing. That is the point. The main thing is Krishna in the center. Why householder? You can become a sannyasi, and if Krishna's not in the center, you'll fail. Ashrams are external to the extent that without Krishna in the center, any ashram will fail. Grihastha, sannyas, brahmachari, anything. That's why the Shastra says, if someone follows their varna or ashram duties perfectly but doesn't develop attraction for the glories of the Lord, their position is hellish. Understanding. Every once in a while we have these talks, you know, just to clear the air. Otherwise you can feel things building up, you know. Any other questions? Rodrigo, question? Yes.
Is it
realistic to advise
or expect a woman coming to this culture to try to become
submissive?
Is it what? Is it
realistic? To expect New Zealand women to be submissive? Ask yourselves. At least they should be cooperative. I don't expect them to be, you know, yes, Prabhu. At least they should be cooperative, because without cooperation, things don't work. Yeah, it's complicated. I agree. But at least one should realize that without cooperation, nothing's going to go on. And men have their natural ways of asserting. That's just the way it is. So the two have to work something out. That's why, like Bhakta Duncan, he was astonished to hear that in New Zealand, they don't use the word boyfriend or girlfriend. It's all partners. They don't do that in England. They use partners. So that means, you know, they equal share. It's natural to expect that both the husband and wife in Krishna consciousness in New Zealand will want to make their marriage successful and keep Krishna in the center and be the servants of each other. Thank you very much. Of course.